guys so much for coming. We're thrilled to have you all here.
It is on.
Put on. Can you guys hear me now? Okay.
Thanks, John.
John, our events coordinator.
Yay!
So thank you all for coming out tonight. We're thrilled to have all four Democratic candidates for mayor and here to discuss some topics particular to downtown and business. And so how this is going to work, we have four questions modeled off of a bunch of questions that we've gathered from area businesses. That are directed to each one of the candidates. They're going to have 3 minutes to respond, and each candidate then has 2 minutes to have a response, and then the candidate who got asked the original question has a minute to respond as well. And then after those, that's just four questions, and after that, we have collected some topics to discuss from the audience. We'll go from there. All right. First, I'm sure many of you guys know, but we're going to introduce the candidates. We have Christopher Taylor, all four city council members, Christopher Taylor, Sally Hart Peterson, Sabra Briere, and Steve Kunzelman. And we're thrilled to have them here, so give them a round of applause for all of them. Great. And so Steve chose the best spot because my first question is actually for him. There's been a lot of discussion about downtown green space recently, and it's ignited a lot of debate. Sure. So there's been a lot of recent discussion about downtown green space, which has ignited a lot of debate. The proposed Library Park and Liberty Plaza are concerns for both downtown businesses and residents who live and work in Ann Arbor. Liberty Plaza has a current reputation for crime, drug use, and violence. Josie Parker of the AADL, the Ann Arbor District Library, has mentioned her concerns about the library park across the street in light of the recent drug problem she's witnessed. Robin Agnew, owner of Aunt Agatha's on 4th Avenue, wants to know how you plan to prevent crime in both the library lot, proposed park, and combat the issues currently plaguing Liberty Plaza.
Well, thank you very much for that. The number one issue when you have crime in a community is that you have to have good police. And I think everyone understands that over the last decade, we've downsized our police department. Oh, you'd like me to stand? We've downsized our police department quite a bit. And we've had over 200 FTEs sworn officers, and now we're down to about 120. This last budget, we are adding at least two FTEs and one, I believe, for traffic enforcement, three FTEs, if I recall. And that's the number one issue when you have to fight crime, is to have a good, decent police force. I've been one of the strongest proponents to have downtown beat cops. I grew up in Ann Arbor. I spent my youth downtown in Ann Arbor. And I remember the beat cops. I remember Officer Blake. All right, we got to know them as teenagers. When you have a beat cop showing up, and I won't tell you why, from that experience, okay, as a teenage rebel growing up in Ann Arbor, I have great admiration for the police force as an adult, because I understand the difficulties that they have to deal with. I understand the clientele that they have to deal with, and I think that's the number one issue. When we talk about green space for downtown and the library lot, first of all, the library lot's not going to get any green space until there's a development on the library lot that's going to help pay for it. Because I've been very clear, I'm not putting the general fund dollar on the library lot. Remember, they spent $58 million to build an underground parking structure that ended up with 500 additional parking spaces and four blocks of streetscape. That parking structure has put the DDA deeply in debt and is cash-strapped. So the library lot for a future open space, future park, as far as I'm concerned, isn't going to go anywhere until there's a development on top. There's not going to be a development on top until they figure out how they package the bond sale. Because the bond sale, all right, if you recall, was premised on a huge down payment and a lot of off-site, all right, $9 million for pedestrian improvements, $6 million for the 5th and Division improvements. If you go back and look at all those records and you look at the resolution that authorized the library lot project, they call it the project. They were going to be doing streetscapes from Beeks to Packard down 5th and Division. Okay? What ended up happening? They value engineered everything out, put it into the hole in the ground, and you got 500 new spaces because you already had 200 spaces there. So the library lot, you know, like I said, if nothing happens in the next 2 years, it's going to be a surface parking lot as it has been all my life, okay, over 40-some-odd years. I lived next to the library lot as a four-year-old, and it was a surface parking lot then. I have a picture of the library lot on my cell phone if anybody wants to see the historical record. In terms of Liberty Plaza, again, we can talk about redesigning it, but until the neighbor next door, the property owner next door, is at the table and ready to put money down along with the city, it's not worth our time or effort, because all you're going to end up doing is spending a lot of money trying to fill in the hole, all right, which is going to then impact how the park is used and accessible to the building and to the library lot. Remember, there's always been that diagonal. And so the number one issue, if you want to fight crime downtown, get a decent police force that's there, not being pulled off in their cars to other places in the city, and that's been what's been happening.
Great. I remember Beat Cops, too, though. I was not a troubled teenager.
Rebel.
I wasn't a rebellious teenager, either. I think there's two parts to this question, and one part is, what are we going to do about making it safer on the streets? One way to look at that is just putting money into more police. And while I have no problem with hiring additional police, I do have a problem with saying that's the solution. Another is to talk about exactly what it is we expect the police to do. For the past year, the city police chief has been looking at what the police do. In looking at what the police do, he's discovered he had a lot of slack time that he could reassign. He reassigned people to traffic enforcement. He reassigned people to walking downtown. This type of actually looking at our expectations and how well we can meet them is a much more effective way to convince me that how many more police we need and what we need them to do. This process isn't complete, but I've seen a lot more police downtown, and I've seen a lot more police stopping cars that are speeding, both of which are really important to me. What to do about the parks, the open space, the green space downtown? On the library lot itself, it was designed to hold a public open space. The question is exactly what we want that public open space to do. On Liberty Plaza, it was designed to enhance a retail establishment that doesn't exist anymore. As we look at these two projects on the same block, we should be looking at their design and how they fit the needs of the community today and tomorrow and together.
Thank you. I'm going to solely focus on the question of public safety downtown. I am clearly in favor of additional beat cops downtown. I think it's important to remember that downtown belongs to everybody, and that it's important that people, not just visitors, not just people who live and work downtown, but people from the neighborhoods who come downtown, feel safe bringing their children here. I'm very happy that the City Council did approve the addition of Beat Cops downtown. I'm also looking forward to the DDA's effort to add ambassadors downtown. This will be another set of eyes and ears, and while they're not legal people or not law enforcement people, they will have the ability to sort of look for problems before they happen. And so I am very much in favor of the DDA putting the ambassadors downtown. Again, more police, more beat cops, more ambassadors is a short-term solution. Longer term, we need to look at the causes of the vagrancy and the homelessness that we see downtown. A lot of that has to do with mental health issues and addiction. In the longer term, the city needs to work more with our stakeholders at the state and county and even federal levels to find funding and grants so that we can expand services to people who are, who by virtue of, you know, problems that happen in their own life, that they're downtown, they're, you know, there's the emerging heroin problem that we've been hearing about. Again, more cops are going to, you know, especially undercover cops, they're the ones that helped the situation on South U. There was a cocaine issue there 10 or 15 years ago, and undercover cops are the ones that helped alleviate that. Again, I think that's what we need downtown, again, so everyone can feel safe.
I'd first like to thank you, thank Literati for having this forum. I think this is an exciting thing for a downtown business to do, and thank you all for coming out today. I work right down the street from Literati and come here a lot, and so it's great to see it filled, as it is often during the day with customers, to fill today with voters. The question relates to the downtown parks, and what are we going to do about them, and how are they going to ultimately be successful? Downtown open space, downtown green space is something that's very important to me. It's very important to so many members of the community. I sit on the Parks Advisory Commission. I've been on the Parks Commission now for 6 years. The Parks Commission took a very long time, took 8 months, to study, to listen to professionals, to look at successful urban parks, and they put together a plan, a set of guidelines for how to create a successful urban park. What we need to do is make sure that Liberty Plaza and that any open space that eventually is created on the library lot, that these spaces conform to those principles, that they exemplify the principles of activity and eyes on the park and accessibility. These are the things that are necessary to have a successful open space. I've drafted a resolution, which council has regrettably, I believe, postponed, to direct staff to redesign Liberty Plaza, to take active steps to do what we can now to plan for it, to change it, to take it away from what it is now, which frankly does not meet any of our aspirations, and to make it a successful place. I believe that this should be done now. We don't need to wait for 1, 2, 3, 5 years before we decide what to do with the library plaza, with the library lot, with the park at the library. This is something that we can take care of today, and I hope that in the future we'll do so.
So the next question goes to Sandra.
1 minute
rebuttal. Oh, 1 minute rebuttal. I'm so sorry about that. Okay. Go ahead.
We'll get practiced at it.
Yeah, that's right.
In response to the idea of DDA ambassadors, as I mentioned, the DDA is very constrained financially, and I think what we're seeing is that they're actually stalling on a number of fronts.
Hold the mic up a little bit.
If you notice, they're not doing any streetscape projects. They're waiting for the plan to come. If you notice the Washington Street repaving project, there was no new pedestrian lights put in when the city came in and did that streetscape, or at least the repaving. The DDA put no money into the 4th Avenue project that occurred last year. And in terms of redesigning a park, the park is really nice. Everybody likes it. It's just unfortunate that other people that we're uncomfortable sitting with also like it. That shows the success of the park. That's why we need police. We need people there to help, keep order, make people move along. When I was growing up, I don't ever, ever, ever remember somebody sitting on the sidewalk with a bucket in their hand, occupying the sidewalk. It's called loitering. Please say, move along.
Thank you guys so much. All right. Next we have Sabra.
Oh, I'm next. Okay.
All right. Many downtown businesses have run into issues with ongoing construction projects that are in violation of their permits. The Waffle Shop owner noticed that his signature was forged when a dumpster was placed in front of his business for construction on the Cielo Chevelle building. The construction team at the 210 to 216 4th Avenue, formerly the Eastern Accents building, has been in violation of their permits a number of times, leaving cinder blocks on the sidewalk, impeding foot traffic to the area businesses. Increased downtown growth inevitably means increased construction, but how would you prevent hindering existing businesses? So my question is, how can private construction be monitored to make sure they're in compliance with their city permits and provide ease of access to current businesses?
Nothing like a difficult question. So there's two answers to this, and the first answer is we need much better inspection processes. Right now, everything runs on complaints. So if you complain about something, then especially to city staff or to the city council member that you happen to know best, odds are your complaint will get a response. That's not
good business. That's not good public policy. But just as we've cut staff in the police department, we have cut staff in every other department in the city. We've cut inspectors. We've added a rental inspector for the first time in years. We've cut planners. We've cut designers. We've cut people to manage projects. And the end result is that the services suffer. We're not going to build up all of those services quickly, primarily because even as the income that the city is receiving, the revenues the city's receiving are inching up, we have a long recovery ahead of us, and we know it. Just as everybody in this room knows that there's a long recovery ahead of us, we're not going to be sweeping into boom time quickly. So one of the things is to again engage enforcement. My policy has always been enforce the rules. It's also been, if the rules don't work, figure out what's wrong with them and change them. No one should find out that someone has forged their signature. And if they do, they should not ever hesitate to let the city know and get this resolved right away. No one should be awakened at 2 o'clock in the morning because the people demolishing the inside of the building across the street decided that in order to make certain traffic can flow on 4th Avenue, they should work all night. Both of those things I know have happened. When the people on 4th Avenue contacted me about that particular violation, we got it resolved immediately, but I'm sure there's other violations that happen all the time. Certainly, I know that there's issues with noise, there's issues with construction, and biggest of all, there are issues with how we expect pedestrians to walk from one part of downtown to another when we don't insist on having pedestrian-protected walkways during construction. That is evident on Huron, it's evident on 4th, it's evident on 1st. It's just constant that we don't demand it of new projects. And one of my goals, regardless of how you vote, regardless of what happens in August, I'm going to get that changed, and it's going to be in the zoning regulations.
Thank you. I think Sabra's right. This is a question of inspections and having the staff to that can do inspections on a timely. Maybe my hand. Can you hear me now? Okay, I'm going to start over. Hopefully my time will start over too. I think Sabre is absolutely right. The question is having the staff to do adequate and timely inspections. Staff has been cut by about 30% in the last 10 years. And what we need is a plan to elevate the revenues in the general fund so that we can add back staff over time. Times are getting better. One of the things that I've been a champion of on the last 2 years of City Council is really developing an economic strategy so that we can take advantage of the economic growth that's coming ahead of us and being able to translate that into not just better city services, but better delivery of city services. And inspections is one of those services that we need to increase the delivery of and improve the delivery of. What we see when we have construction going on downtown within the DDA district, remember, keep in mind, this is a TIF district, and so the incremental revenue for construction downtown goes back into the downtown. It doesn't go to the general fund. It's the general fund that pays for the inspectors, so we need to do both. We need to continue to revitalize and continuously improve downtown, but look for other ways to increase the general fund. In 2016, actually, all of us were on the DDA City Council.
Not me.
You were not? Oh, you attended the meetings. It felt like you were there. Thank you for attending. But we were on the, Steve, Chris, and I were on the meeting, on the task force to think about the DDA City Council relationship. And there was consensus, wasn't unanimous, but there was consensus that we would cap the DDA TIF in 2016. So when the DDA is in good years, that they're going to start returning some of that incremental revenue to the taxing entities, including the city of Ann Arbor. So I'm in favor of that going forward. Again, the key is to have an economic strategy in order to increase staff.
Oh, that's why you had your arm.
Thank you.
You go next.
The concern with with the question of proactive enforcement of code violations is not limited to the downtown. We have activities going on downtown. There is absolutely no question that regulations and building code and construction codes simply have to be followed. It's obviously outrageous, this issue of forgery. We need to have as much staff as possible doing as good a job as possible of addressing this and addressing this swiftly. Our neighborhoods, too, suffer from this same concern. We have a complaint-driven system for code enforcement, for litter, for noise out in the neighborhoods, for parking violations. These are things that a city which is growing again, a city whose revenue is growing again, I believe is going to put on the front burner of areas where we need to take action swiftly. It's a real, I think, core quality of life issue. We don't need to have very much ramped up set of staff. We don't have the resources that that might not be a balanced approach. What we do need to do is with targeted enforcement. We know generally where there are issues. There are issues around construction sites. There are issues around near downtown neighborhoods. These are places that that require additional attention, that we can use efficient resources and make sure that folks who are coming to our city and living in our city comply with the comply with the quality of life ordinances and rules that are essential to us getting along.
Building code enforcement. Just to give you a little history, I served in local government for 7 elected officials for over 10 years, and for 4 of those years I was a township administrator and I supervised a building department. Government is a book of rules. When the rules are in black and white, they should be they need to be enforced, as we all have agreed to. The building department has an incredible amount of latitude to shut down a building site if there's a forged permit. The building inspector should be notified of a forgery and shut down. Post the building the construction project with a stop work order. That gets the builder's attention. The building inspector is, unfortunately, very busy. As we heard, there's a lot of issues going on in the neighborhoods. You might be reading about some of the dangerous buildings out, particularly in the east side of Ann Arbor. I can think of at least 3 or 4 sites that need to be torn down. In my neighborhood, we have a foundation that got condemned after 4 years of this guy trying to build it. So when it comes to enforcement, the other aspect of it is leadership. Because what happens when building sites get stop work orders posted, builders complain to elected officials, and then elected officials waffle and go back to the building department and say, oh, please, let them slide. You can't have that. I won't do that. That's one of the aspects that I bring to the table. Leadership. Tough, courageous leadership. Know how to take on these kind of endeavors, these kind of issues. I did it. I worked at it. And I had quite the reputation for the years that I worked out in Sumter Township. I also had the trust of the electorate and the trust of the elected officials. You can't waffle. You have to follow the rules. The rules are equal to everybody. You can't just let one builder slide and let another one not. And that's the big difference that we're going to be facing with, because we don't have the staff to go out there and proactively check every building permit. But when that complaint comes in, it should be real easy to get that person's attention by posting a stop work order or making sure that all the other permits, are correct.
I'm going to suggest you turn your alarm on.
Yeah.
Because all of us can get long-winded about something. You've heard that we need to improve our enforcement. We all agree on that. You've also heard that we have not quite enough inspectors. You will all agree on that. What you also need to think about is that, to the best of my knowledge, council members as a whole, as a group, restrain themselves. We don't interfere in projects. We're not supposed to interfere in projects, and I would be very disappointed to hear that any of us did that, at least this group of council members. You also need to think about the role today that you play, and that is complaining. complain to me, complain to anybody up here if you see a violation. This is what we need to hear, and we need to hear it because this gives us the material we need in order to make changes at the city.
Great, thank you. Our next question will be for Sally. Recently, the public art fund was appropriated for other use. While the current mayor believes that public art will pay back to community through economic development, there is nothing on the books that promotes it currently. Our friends at the Ann Arbor Art Center want to know, do you have a plan for public art if you become mayor?
It's a great question. I am a huge fan of public art. I am not a fan of the Percent for Art program. I just don't think it worked well for Ann Arbor. It was very aspirational. It had the right end in mind in terms of celebrating what art, public art does for a community. We have, I think, the world's largest art fair. Maybe it's not the world's largest art fair, but it's definitely something that Ann Arbor is known for. We need to continue to celebrate the arts in our community. My issue with the Percent for Art program is that it was too limiting, and that the way art was selected didn't take into consideration as ambitiously as it could the ideas from the community. I know the Public Art Commission has shifted a little bit in terms of inviting more community engagement, specifically with the stadium arts, the stadium bridge artwork. I was part of the community engagement process, and I think that is an example of how, when the Public Art Commission continues, how art should be selected. The Percent for Art program, the funding mechanism, just clearly wasn't working, and it wasn't sitting well with Ann Arbor. We were all, I think this was the task force, all four of us were on when we disbanded the Percent for Art program. Going forward, the plan is to shift it into a private-public partnership. And I did vote in favor of $80,000 to take this one more step to launch it from being solely within the city to being a public and private partnership. I think there's another year to go. I would certainly vote for another $80,000 to continue that momentum to get it out from the city in a way that transitions it elegantly from a purely public program to a hybrid public-private program. We get compared to Grand Rapids all the time. They have Art Prize. Art Prize is privately funded. We need to look at the stakeholders we have in the community who have deeper pockets than maybe the general fund does, so that we can appropriately fund and celebrate arts in the community.
The arts and culture are absolutely foundational to Ann Arbor's competitive advantage. It's something that attracts people and enlivens folks' lives who are here. So it's something we have to take very seriously, and it's something that a mayor has to take very seriously. I myself have a music degree. The arts are very important to me personally. I've been involved in some of the major, I've been involved on the directors of Festifools, one of a central piece of performance art. It's almost public, to moving Ann Arbor's quality of life forward. With respect to the public art program, we have a new system. It does not have the same problems that the Percent to Art program had. What it will do, and I'm looking forward to do, is work public art into the design of capital projects going forward. So, for example, if there's going to be a project in a park, if there's going to be a new field somewhere, a new play structure, the Public Art Commission and the staff are going to develop guidelines to determine whether that particular project would be appropriate for some piece of art, some piece of advanced design to enliven us, to make our experience with that project better. I think this is an exciting way of going forward. I think it will mean that art is it's something that we do in the city, that it is one of our values. I don't think that it's going to mean that, I think that it's crucial. I think that it's going to require city councils in the future to have a commitment to saying yes to art in a project. We know that a parks project is going to cost X without art. We know that it's going to cost X plus Y with art. Council, through communication from residents to whom art is important, and I believe that they are many, is going to need to know and have the courage to stand up and say that this is something that's good for us, it's good for the city, and we need to get it done.
we all love public art. I especially love cultural arts, though. I grew up in Ann Arbor, and I remember many of the events from the past. The Ann Arbor Blues and Jazz Festival is one of the most prominent. But also the Medieval Festival, which is kind of probably the similar to what Shakespeare in the Arbor is similar to these days. I was a roadie with my parents. And I don't really want to talk about the past, because I think we all know that the Percent for Art program, you know, had its failings, and that public art in general, when you're talking about monumental art, sculptures, and fountains, you know, really probably are not best funded by public dollars, because it really makes people upset. If they don't like the art, they don't like the fact that their dollars are used to pay for it. And I agree with Sally's idea of or the need for more private funding. However, who wants to give money to the city, all right? And unfortunately, that's just, I think, the nature of how we have to deal with it. We are fortunate, though, that the U of M gets lots of public art around their buildings. And so, you know, we have that benefit. So it's not that Ann Arbor is starved by any means for public art. We may want more of it, which is great. But at the same time, we also need to balance with it, with the cultural arts that I think that Ann Arbor is more known for. When we talk about the art, the Ann Arbor Art Fair and other events that we used to have, much more prominent. And I would like to bring that back. And that is my plan, is to somehow get a hold of the MishCon site, create the Ann Arbor Festival grounds, and bring back the Ann Arbor Blues and Jazz Festival so the people from Chicago can take the train and come to Ann Arbor.
We all have our own aspirations. My particular take on the public art issue and how to do that as mayor is to remind you that when we talked about this being included in capital improvement projects, that's what we called baked in, and we meant that you could enhance the design of a project as well as include art in the project. To me, that was very valuable, because I'd rather see good architecture than bad art. But the other part about this, and the part that involves you and could engage you, is that we opened up the opportunity to do crowdfunding, to have somebody bring the city an exciting idea, and you all decide whether you would help pay for that, not with your tax dollars, but with the dollars in your pocket. And that, I think, is something that we haven't done and we really need to do. I was saddened this week when I read that the Public Art Commission felt they had no work to go forward and they were going to sort of fold up their tents and steal quietly away, because there is so much work to do when it comes to public art. We have so many opportunities in this city to enhance individual lives, to be creative, to look at the different ways visual arts affect us. I'm a visual artist once upon a time. I certainly prefer to see visual arts and to experience music. So from my perception, we need art on Main Street, we need art in parks, we need art that's temporary. We need art that's on display and goes away. We need art that's permanent, that we decide we want to own. And you get to help pick the stuff we want to own. We ought to set up the temporary displays.
So I want to carry on the theme of the public-private partnerships and who wants to give money to the city of Ann Arbor. Well, we all give money to the city of Ann Arbor, whether we like it or not. But I think there are a lot of private sector partners who would be excited about funding art, and I'll relate this to the earlier question about the Liberty Plaza and the public the library lot. Imagine those not necessarily as green space, but urban plaza space, that with the partnerships of the owners of the buildings, the surrounding buildings, and other private sector partners, that we could really create placemaking in those sites. I also agree that our public-private art program should go beyond sculptural art and to consider festivals, more festivals kind of events and programs, because that draws people downtown and that draws people into your stores.
Thank you all. And so our last question, directed question from Literati, is for Christopher Taylor. There has been what seems to be, and certainly as a native Ann Arborite, I will say it seems to be a lot, a sudden proliferation of high-rise apartment and condo buildings in downtown Ann Arbor. This has changed the character of downtown in many ways, both good and bad. We all wish to see a balance of good development and maintenance of the character of what currently makes our town great. How do you envision the future of both the skyline and the streetscape of downtown Ann Arbor?
Thank you. The current state, the current pace of development downtown is, I don't believe, sustainable. We have seen a great deal of development over the recent past. If that were to continue, we would have a city that is not recognizable. I believe that the natural ebb and flow of things is going to be such that the pace of change will slow, and I'm glad for that. Our downtown needs to be vibrant and active, but what it needs to do also is maintain its character. And so our goal is going to be to find that balance between vitality and engagement downtown with a retention of a knowledge of the place that we love. And so how do we go about doing that? We do it through appropriate zoning priorities, appropriate zoning premiums, and we do it through our design review board. We have a design review board which reviews site plans that come into the city. Right now, this design review board comes fairly late in the process, after folks have already submitted their site plans, after property owners have already invested tens of thousands of dollars, perhaps more, in the plan of their building. I'd like to see this shifted. We have a design review board. Let's have them work with property owners before they invest in a site plan fully, so that they will have an opportunity to learn what design principles are appropriate for Ann Arbor, so they have an opportunity to hear what the community wants in a building that will be good for the property owner, but also, and most importantly, good for the residents. We also have zoning premiums, which give property owners the ability to build buildings above a certain height. Right now, for example, we encourage residential property downtown, and I think that's perfectly appropriate. That residential premium, however, runs to buildings that have six-bedroom units. And we all know that a building with a set of six-bedroom units has a limited clientele. And that's, the students are awesome. I'm glad that they're in their city, but they don't need to predominate in the downtown. We need a diversity of housing downtown, a diversity of residents downtown. And so I would want those zoning premiums, those height premiums, to be limited to residential buildings that have pretty much only ones and twos, one and two bedroom units with perhaps a smattering of threes. I think this would encourage diversity of residents downtown. I think we get a different character downtown. I think it's also, too, to recognize that with respect to that character, we're blessed with a great number of historical districts downtown. Much of the city is, I'm glad to say it, the way it was 20 years ago, 30 years ago, and it's going to be the same way in another 20, 30 years, because folks who have come before us had the foresight to put historic districts where they are appropriate, for example, Main Street, State Street, and so forth. So that is the my 10 seconds are up. That's my answer. Thanks.
As a long time, as a townie growing up in Ann Arbor, yes, we've seen dramatic changes downtown with the high rise buildings that have been built that are obviously all pretty much geared towards students. The cat's out of the bag. We rezoned downtown, D1, D2, or the A2, D2. That's been done. Now we're hearing that we may need to change that some more. I voted against the original rezoning because I saw that what it was doing was creating something too simplistic for the mosaic of zoning pattern that we had that I grew up with. It was not going to stop buildings, and some of the buildings that we have were built under or approved under the old zoning. So the only difference really was the A2, D2 put some height limits, but also allows for big, blocky buildings that we did not have before. And it also wiped out a lot of the other incentives. What are we going to do for the future? We've got a number of vacant lots. I agree with Chris that it's not sustainable. The U of M cannot just keep having the largest freshman class every year in the years ahead. That's what's happening. We hear that's what's happening this year. More freshmen. Now they're putting sophomores out into they're going to subsidize downtown rents. So, of course, you can imagine that would drive the market that they need more buildings downtown. How can we stop that? We can't stop it. Can we go back and rechange the zoning? We're already in the process of having to tweak it for the mistakes that we didn't, foresee originally. It's going to be a process, though. I got 30 seconds. It's going to be a process. It's also going to take political willpower. That's the big thing that's going to have to do. We have to have the political willpower to actually push back, change the zoning, require, one of the things that I've been pushing is have maximum lot sizes, and we can do that. Maximum lot sizes will prevent big, blocky buildings.
Couple things. Almost all the buildings that have been built under D1 zoning, modern zoning, don't have six-bedroom units. They have ones, twos, threes. I think that's important to keep in mind because, honestly, the people who can afford to live in those buildings don't want to live with five other students. So the other thing to keep in mind is that it turns out not everyone who lives in those buildings is a student. There's quite a few people who live in those buildings who work downtown. That always surprises me, but it's just true. As we talk about rezoning downtown, and we are talking about it, the incentive to build more residential is under question. Another thing that's under question is whether we should be encouraging any given type of housing. But the truth is, these buildings are not things that we like. Whether they are short and stocky, whether they occupy a large amount of space on the ground, the biggest issue is they're poorly designed. So I'm going to walk through the process, just so you know. The rules say, first the developer comes to you and says, what do you think of this idea? And then the developer submits his plans to the city. Before the city does anything else with it, though, the design review board looks at the plans and says, you really need to fix this stuff, guys. And then the developer can ignore whatever the design review board says. And there is the problem. So as we go forward with this, we need to talk about how to give teeth to the design review board. This is what we all want, is good design. We want it to be sensitive to the adjacent properties, and we really, really want it to be sensitive to our needs downtown.
Thank you. So when we talk about development downtown, I really think we need to look at the big picture. Let's look at the policies that we have that are driving the kind of development that we have and the lack of policies that are not driving the development that we do want. When I joined City Council 2 years ago, we identified economic development as a budget priority. And being like a good business person that I am and a good new City Council member, I looked in our budget and I looked for our staff in economic development. We don't have an economic development staff in the city of Ann Arbor. We only have a $75,000 contract for economic development. And so for me, if we want to actualize our master plan, if we want to actualize the kind of development that fits with the heritage and character of not just downtown Ann Arbor, but all of our business quarters and in our neighborhoods, we really need to have some sort of economic strategy. And the city just simply doesn't have a strategy to provide the wherewithal to fund the kind of development that we really want. In fact, the city does have quite a bit of disincentives for developers to develop to scale. We have very high connection upfront fixed costs, utility connection fees that are really, really high. We need to rethink what the existing policies are today that encourage the kind of development that our skyscrapers on every single, or not every corner, but the kind of development that we have today is a result of, I think, inadequate policies internally in the city that we need to refocus on once we come up with a strategy ahead of time. I do want to mention, with regard to development, the city is engaging in the redevelopment readiness process, certification process going forward. So I'm cautiously optimistic that the decision to engage with this program, it's a program sponsored by MEDC, that allows us to make sure that the development process is more predictable, reliable, and dependable.
Jeff, briefly, this gets to the design review board. Whether or not the design review board, which is a board made up of architects, designers, and builders that have been appointed by the city, whether that proves to be a mandatory approval or whether it's discretionary but at a different period of the time. The Design Review Board has themselves disclaimed a desire to be a mandatory part of the process. I think that it's crucial that we look to them, that we do everything we can to encourage developers, perhaps by withholding premiums from folks that do not get Design Review Board approval. This is the sort of thing I think that we'd like to do to make sure that property owners, when they do develop their parcels, that it um, we want it to be good for them too, of course, but more importantly that it's good for the rest of the city.
All right. And so John went around when you all arrived and was gathering some topics for discussion and questions. So we're going to go review those, and you'll each have 2 minutes to respond. We'll start with Chris. The school consolidation was recently in the news with Whitmore Lake Schools and Ann Arbor Public Schools. What is your vision for the Ann Arbor Public Schools as mayor?
I've got 2 kids in the schools. One is in Tappan, the other going into Pioneer. The schools are obviously existential to Ann Arbor's quality of life, to the future of the city. The Ann Arbor city government does not directly relate with the schools, and so this there's a little asymmetry here. I believe, however, that the mayor is uniquely situated to advocate for Ann Arbor Public Schools. The schools have undergone tremendous budget cuts. It's, I believe, disgraceful what has happened in the state. The devaluation of public education is tragic for the long-term good of the state. It's not going to produce anything but it's a disincentive for folks to come to Michigan and Ann Arbor by extension and to stay here. So we as a city need to get together with the school board and stakeholders, and I believe this is an opportunity to work with the university to advocate to the state government to increase funds for public education. We have a new mayor. We have a new president. We have a school district in trouble. I believe that the mayor should work with the president, should work with the school board and the superintendent to marshal forces to advocate for an increased emphasis on public education from the state to the city.
I'm going to address this from a couple of angles. One is, for me, it comes down to property values. Again, we pay a significant 52%, 52 cents on a dollar of our tax bill goes to public education. As we have a strategy in the city that increases or that takes advantage of the economic prosperity that's ahead of us, as we begin to develop a strategy, property values are going to increase. The amount that we send to Lansing will be higher. I would hope that the proportion coming back would also be higher to the Ann Arbor Public Schools. Christopher did hit an important point in terms of stakeholders. Not only is it important for the city of Ann Arbor to have strong public schools, it's really important to the University of Michigan. They need strong public schools in order to attract faculty and administration. And it's one of those things that is of mutual interest between the city and the university, and I will finish Christopher's statement that yes, the university is going to have a new president, and yes, the city is going to have a new mayor, and it's time for a new town gown relationship. The city and the university do not have any kind of strategic dialogue on a regular basis at the top, and this needs to happen. The city for too long has been resentful, not just the city government, but I would say there are plenty of residents that are resentful toward the university for not paying property tax, and we need to get over that. We need to engage with the university at the highest levels in order to take care to address issues of quality of life. And our Ann Arbor Public Schools, even though we don't have any legislative authority over them, the school board does. We need to make sure that we're all looking out, that all of our stakeholders are working together to make sure Ann Arbor Public Schools are as best as they can be.
So there's no doubt that having good schools in the city of Ann Arbor is very important. Keep in mind that people attend Ann Arbor Public Schools who do not live in Ann Arbor and do not pay Ann Arbor taxes, but they do pay the school taxes, and it's very important to have quality education. This has been taken away bit by bit, piece by piece, over the last decade, maybe even longer than a decade, because the truth is the way we fund schools is not working, and we all know it's not working. In the current situation, the impact on the city schools is such that we're a donor community. We give more money to the state than we get back per pupil. One of the reasons to talk with Whitmore Lake, though, is because Whitmore Lake is in worse shape than we are.
Whitmore Lake has lost schools, lost teachers, lost its capacity to be flexible, and they were at the point of having to close more schools. I spent a lot of time on the phone yesterday talking with school board members and the school superintendent to make certain I completely understood the impact of the state's rules, the state's decisions on our public schools, because if we don't have quality schools, your property values do go down. People don't want to live here. But people aren't going to come if Michigan doesn't have good public schools. And we need to refocus individually and locally and at the state level on the fact that public schools are not the same as an education. Yes, you can go get an education at a charter school, but that takes funding away from public schools and it damages them. Every time somebody touts the benefits of a charter school, what I hear is, we are going to make certain that your public schools fail. The teachers aren't your enemy, the school system isn't your enemy, and our ability to work with public school here in Ann Arbor is one of the challenges and one of the strengths we already have. So obviously I am close to many of the people on school board, many of the people in the school administration. You need that ability to talk across groups.
I'm a product of Ann Arbor Public Schools, graduated from Pioneer in 1981, attended Pittsfield Elementary in kindergarten. I have four kids that also just that have graduated from Ann Arbor Public Schools, and Ann Arbor Public Schools gave them the greatest education to go to college. That being said, we're screwed. Ann Arbor's the most liberal city in the state. Lansing doesn't like us. It's full of Republicans that are raiding the school aid fund. What can a mayor do about it? Well, you know, that's a tough question. All right. One thing that I am now starting to comprehend, and let me just put it, you know, the discussion that takes place at my dining room table with my Ann Arbor Public School teacher wife is whether or not to reauthorize the LDFA. All right. If you've read recently through one of the local media outlets, the LDFA has been saying that they reimburse or get reimbursed for the tax dollars that they collect from the TIF in downtown, and that money goes back to the school aid fund. We're finding out that that may not be true. So do I, as an elected official, reauthorize the LDFA for the money that it is taking out of the school aid fund so that we can give it to Spark CEOs and watch Whitmore Lake schools go down the toilet because they don't have any money, money that they're supposed to be getting from the state? It's a vicious, vicious circle, and there is no easy answer. But when the question comes in front of you, the voter, and I, as an elected official, should we vote to annex the Whitmore Lakes Public Schools into the Ann Arbor Public School System? I'm probably going to vote no. As much as I would like to help Whitmore Lake out, it's not the problem that we created. Lansing created that problem. They need to solve it.
All right. There have been a couple comments on the sheet about being a green city. Being a green city, is Ann Arbor the greenest it can be, and what can it do to be a more green city?
We'll circle first. I think we're ahead of our peers on being a green city. Going forward, though, and looking ahead, I'm very cognizant that, for example, clean energy is more expensive energy. The technology isn't where it is, where it might be in 15 or 20 years when sourcing clean from non-fossil fuels and sourcing clean energy is cost effective. Right now, we need to start saving in order to adopt better clean energy practices in the future. I'm a big fan of wind. I like to say that a lot. You guys didn't get that. Wind energy. Big fan of wind energy. The city needs to look toward finding alternative ways to source our own energy. Last year, there was a vote on city council to urge our pension board to divest from fossil fuels. To me, I voted against that. I was one of two city council members to vote against that, because while it sent a signal that we were focusing on clean energy, we were doing it in the wrong way. We were incurring huge costs, and I think it would have been fiscally irresponsible if the pension board had actually incurred the cost to divest from fossil fuel companies. Instead, I asked the Energy Commission to come back to City Council with a proposal for not divesting from fossil fuel companies, but investing in clean energy companies like wind, like solar. And I think we need to, again, think broader going forward. We need to start saving now to afford clean energy in the future.
So Sally and I differ a little bit on this. We are a green city, but we are not as green as we could be. We are not as green as we ought to be. Certainly not as green as many of our peer communities. And part of the reason is because we are here in the Car Midwest, and we have invested a lot historically in more cars, in being car-centric, in worrying, for instance, about parking in ways that you cannot see as much in Ann Arbor as you can in other places in the Midwest, but it's still car-centric. As we talk about all the things that we could do that are green, whether it's improving the odds of some individual homeowner putting in solar or putting in geothermal, or it's improving the odds of somebody riding their bike. We have bike lanes that don't complete themselves. We have crosswalks that disappear, frankly. Nobody knows quite where to cross in some parts of some neighborhoods. We have streets that could be much greener, really deal with infrastructure improvements. These are aspirational goals that we should all be talking about, and they're all manageable without significantly changing how we spend money. It's also true that we could be investing even more in LED lights, in alternative energy sources, without increasing the city's cost by simply shifting what we're doing. We have some rules that we have put in place, including a so-called moratorium on streetlights that actually isn't a moratorium on the number of streetlights, but on the energy use. Most of us have had a hard time finding out that's what it's really about. So we can improve the city, we can save money, we can invest in bike lanes and green energy, in clean streets, in green streets, in all of these various tools. And it's a goal for us.
Green city, sustainable. Those are the kind of the buzzwords that we always hear about. Yes, we can always do more. Cost money. Do we have it? Not really. Do we want more LED lights? Yes, very much so. We want City Council just approved a contract with DTE to install LED lights on the overheads. Can we do more on mass transit? Boy, we just approved a millage. Thank goodness. We're going to see better improvements on mass transit. That's, to take the cars off the street. Recycling, Ann Arbor Recycles. I was a driver for Recycle Ann Arbor in 1987, long before we had carts. So Ann Arbor has been doing its part, undoubtedly, probably more than many communities across the state of Michigan. Street trees. We just funded $1 million to work on our street tree issues in terms of how much it's been neglected over the years. Composting. We've got one of the greatest composting facilities because the city bought a huge piece of land out Platte Road for future composting expansion. We were going to be the composter for all of Southeast Michigan, all right, but it didn't quite pan out that way. Reduce, reuse, recycle. I thrift shop a lot. I don't know about the rest of you, but there's some great opportunities in this community that aren't driven by city government. I think a lot of what we're talking about is what do we do as a society in Ann Arbor? And that's where I think we lead by example. I like to pride myself as the best-dressed council member for $25 or less. Anytime you see me on council in a blazer and a tie and a shirt, it's used.
Ann Arbor is a green city. It is, in many respects, an environmental leader and strives to be, but we, of course, can always do better. We in the city, we can't stop climate change, but we can and we ought to do our part. We have a climate action plan. I'm looking forward to its being further implemented. The city, I just drafted a budget amendment, which was passed, which puts $125,000 into community-facing programs to improve energy efficiency. Approximately 47% of the greenhouse gas load in the city is used by residents and businesses. The city itself only has about a little shade under 2%. So if we are really to be a green city, if we're to push this agenda forward, as I think we need to in order to be sustainable, then it's residents and businesses that we have to convince to work hard towards that common goal. There are lots of other ways that Ann Arbor ought to be more green. Expanded rail traffic is an important one. For example, Amtrak projects that we'll have 5 times the ridership over the next 20, 25 years in Amtrak. Right now, we have a station that absolutely just can't handle it. It's so important that we have a new station that's going to be successful, that will accommodate this rail traffic to bring people in, let people go out, and bring them back, of course, in order to, you know, keep cars off the road, reduce congestion, and, you know, by also just improve folks' quality of life so that they'll have the ability to get around. We have to, again, emphasize mass transit throughout the city. There's a connector from the north to the central to the south that we're working on in conjunction with the university, in cooperation with the university, that the university is going to have to pay a lion's share of. But we need to make sure that we move forward with this, that we're not afraid of working with the university on this point. It's going to be good for the city. There's also lots of other opportunities we can have. We can expand the PACE program. We can work on things like community solar. We have opportunities. We just have to have the vision and the tenacity to grasp them.
All right. Many of you were really general, which is great. And you wanted to know what their vision for Ann Arbor's future is. Specifically, where do you see downtown in 5 years? And where do you see Ann Arbor in general in 5 years? And we'll have Sabra start.
I don't really like speaking in 5-year increments. I know a lot of plans do that. But the truth is we should be talking about 40 years. We should be talking about 40 years because the changes we make today are going to still be with us in 40 years. So I'm going to tell you that in 40 years, I want to see downtown has lots of small businesses that are unique to Ann Arbor, that allow people to come and shop, but that don't expect you to do all your shopping in town. You should be able to come downtown and go to the bar, go to the restaurant, feel safe while you do it. But frankly, you should be able to do that under tall trees, under increased busy sidewalks, under wider sidewalks. You should be able to spend your time downtown and seeing that the sides of buildings are green and growing and cool compared to what they are right now, which is heating up the earth. And you should be able to see that people are able to coexist downtown, that it's filled with people of all ages. One thing I'd really like to see is that we move, this is just a personal bias, we move some classes from WCTC downtown. And I'd like to see that because I honestly think many of us would take some of those WCC enhancement classes, whatever they are, whether it's map reading or computer programming or whatever it is that's offered in 40 years that excites us. And we would do that if it were downtown and we could go out to eat afterwards because this is human nature. I also want to see increased numbers of children downtown, and so my own bias is that we include space where children feel comfortable. I don't want to talk about 5 years. 5 years is doable and manageable in short term. I want to talk about long term and then break it down into little pieces so it's digestible. And anyone who gives me a 5-year plan, I think, oh man, we're just going to be back at this in 3 years.
As a student of urban planning and landscape architecture, you know, I too appreciate the idea of planning far out. However, as an elected official, I can only control for the time that I sit on council. All right, I cannot make a future council spend money the way I wish they would spend it if I plan it for them. And we saw that with the library lot. We've got a project that nobody has any idea what the future is going to behold. So within 5 years, what I would like to see, I'd like to see the library move over to the library lot, and that would get rid of all of our problems. I'll give them the property, all right, the air rights, as long as they build something, because that will then not be any imposition to the Build America bonds that have a 10% private use restriction, because the public library is a public entity. And so that will solve that problem. But one of the things growing up in Ann Arbor, and as a student of landscape architecture and urban planning, is I pay attention to details within cities. I actually read manhole covers. I actually see where they were made. In Ann Arbor, they're made in East Jordan. In New York City, they're made in India. I want to look, walk around downtown and see fire hydrants painted. I want to see the streets paved. I want to see pedestrian lights down Washington, down towards Kiwanis, down in front of downtown Home and Garden, which they don't have. I want to see the street trees planted. If you look around and you walk down the street, you'll see a number of areas where they're basically cut off or dead and needing, you know, waiting to be replanted. Well, we're past that planting season this year, maybe next year. I like the vibrancy of being able to sit outside downtown, and I think we need to be able to make sure that we have that opportunity. So I would like to make sure that when we do so, we also have a safe environment and that we have downtown beat cops, and that's the number one thing that I'll be working for with my colleagues on council if I'm mayor, is to bring back downtown beat cops on a regular basis all summer long.
I have a vision of my vision of Ann Arbor, my image of Ann Arbor, is sort of a hybrid. We are a small city, but we're also a university town. It's this mixture of things that I think that this balance of things that I think exemplifies us. What it means is that we're a city that that values diversity and openness and education and learning. It means too that we are a city. And that's, you know, on the college town side. But our small cityness means that we have a certain personal pride, that we have our own economy, our own downtown, which is separate and distinct from the university. So finding this balance is what we need to do. It means that we are going to have a downtown that is vibrant and active where people can come. It's going to mean that we have wonderful neighborhoods that themselves are clean, safe, and inviting. It means that the urban forest throughout the city is expanded and improved. The urban forest has taken a real hit after the Great Recession, after the Emerald Ash Borer. We're now taking steps to fix that, and that's just crucial and fundamental to the improvement of the city, to the improvement of the quality of life and folks throughout all aspects of the city. So finding this mix, finding this balance is what is going to be the task of city government. City government isn't going to be able to achieve all this. It's going to be in part the energy and activities of residents and businesses and in collaboration with the university that we're going to hopefully get it done.
So I'm going to look 5 to 10 years out. What does downtown Ann Arbor look like five to 10 years out? For me, it comes down to having a prudent economic policy that allows us to grow revenue to our general fund so we can stimulate the kind of building and character downtown that keeps with our character and our heritage. That means moderate-sized buildings. That means developing on vacant city-owned property and selling the vacant city-owned property so we can have the kind of development that, again, inspires placemaking, a mix of urban plaza space and moderate-sized buildings. I see less vagrancy, less homelessness. I see progress, having the revenue in order to alleviate the issues of homelessness, mental illness in the city and in the county. I look at the business quarters leading to downtown. I see on North Main Street, for example, between the New Center and M14, I see an area that's ripe for redevelopment. I see planned unit development in terms of retail, condo, large floor plate office space, which we desperately need in the downtown area, restaurants along the river. I know that for cities in the state of Michigan who develop on their riverside, they enjoy a 3-to-1 to 6-to-1 return on investment. So I also see neighborhoods that are benefiting from prudent development elsewhere. I see fewer potholes. I see smoother roads. I see less congestion. Again, having a strategy that pulls all these pieces together is what the city lacks right now. That's what the city looks like. What does the city feel like? I think that's a relevant question as well. I feel that we would have a better relationship with U of M, again, collaborating on areas of mutual interest. And with respect to the U of M, it seems like we're always sort of fighting with them. The city is always fighting for relevance with U of M. I want to see people excited about the city governance. I want to see transparent decision-making. I want people to be excited about the city and to be excited to become part of the city government. Thanks.
All right. And so we're going to ask you all to give a final statement. And in that statement, I would like you to say what you're currently reading and what your favorite book is.
Yay!
All right, we'll start with Steve.
Oh, I was reading a book on Theodore Roosevelt, but I haven't had time to work on it since I'm campaigning. And I hope to finish it someday, because he is one of my idols, and Theodore Roosevelt, a true progressive, and did everything that I admire in terms of the environment, in terms of government. What was the rest of your question?
Favorite book.
Well, so anyway, in terms of my final statement, again, I thank everybody for coming out to this debate. It's really quite an honor just to be a candidate for mayor, the townie that I am. I don't think anybody, including Officer Blake, would have thought that I would have been a candidate for mayor at this time. But that being said, you have choices, and that's one reason why we're all running, is to give you a choice to be the next mayor of Ann Arbor. There's a lot of history that we can talk about in terms of the past, years under the previous mayor, who's still there for a few more months, but shall name nameless at this point. But as we move forward, the things that you heard tonight are the things that you need to think about, all right? I've given you some very, pointed responses. I've told you my vision just for the next few years. I've told you about my past, and I think that that gives you some, idea of what kind of person I am. I have been very transparent. I've been very outspoken, and I've been very trustworthy, and I will be trustworthy as your mayor, and I hope that I can get your vote.
So I read a lot, and I just think I need to say that first, because right now, this morning, I started reading Sylvia, Queen of the Headhunters, which it sounds like it's something for children, but really it's about the last Rani of Sarawak, and it's a really interesting read because she's living a English colonial life, and she's not exactly what I would consider normal. But I've just started, so I can't reveal any secrets. I don't have a favorite book. I have too many favorite books to answer that question. So there's the favorite books in science fiction, the favorite books in history, the favorite novels, the favorite poems. It would be boring to bother you with all of that. But I will tell you a book that I think is really interesting, and that's a book called Being Wrong. And you may think that that's an odd thing for somebody to read, but it's a fast read, second, it's a comprehensive read, and third, it reminds us that we all make decisions based on just inadequate information from time to time. And as we talk about being wrong, we also talk about how to be right. But how to admit that you made a mistake is a really important part of my life, and it's a really important life of civic government. I didn't talk that much about myself. I talked a lot about what I think and what I believe and what I've done, but I haven't talked that much about myself because, honestly, you're buying what I think. You're buying what I've done. These are the things that matter the most to you, is my competence on council and my ability to work with everybody. Those are what I bring to this skill set, and I really encourage you to vote for me, as callous and narcissistic as that sounds, because I think that the most important thing going forward is not to be part of a faction and not to be part of a group, but to be part of giving you service.
So I'm currently reading Lowlands, and I was just trying to look up the author. Someone help me with the name of
it. Jhumpa-Lahiri.
Say it again?
Jhumpa-Lahiri.
Jhumpa-Lahiri. So I should have finished it by Monday night, because that's when my book club met, and I didn't actually finish it because I, too, have been busy doing other things. And my book club is actually not exactly a book club. Technically, we're called the Wine and Discussion Group, because I want to be completely honest with you. That's what goes on. My favorite book of all time is A Prayer for Owen Meany. I read it 10 or 12 years ago. It had such an impact on me. It was so long ago, I can't remember why it had the impact on me that it did. I think it had something to do with being a minister's daughter, a PK. But that is my favorite book of all time. Closing statements. So I am reminded, and I've been using this phrase quite a bit and quoting Mary Sue Coleman quite a bit in the last weekend. I was very struck by a comment that she made when she took the helm at University of Michigan. And she said, I didn't take this job to maintain the status quo. I took this job to find new ways to excel. And that is truly my attitude going forward. As potentially your next mayor of Ann Arbor, we need to find new ways to excel. To me, that means coming up with an economic policy, a strong policy that is led by the city, that transforms the prosperity around us to better city services and better quality of life, better value for taxpayer dollars. New ways to excel in terms of a better relationship with the University of Michigan, collaborating at the top on areas of transportation, job creation, quality of life issues that are including the Ann Arbor Public Schools. And the third thing is better transparency in decision making in city government, and better trust in city government, and inclusiveness in terms of making sure that we are attracting people to our boards and commissions from a wide variety of skills and talents rather than continuing to nominate the same people in the same jobs. I really want to open that up, and by demonstrating transparency and openness on city government, we can invite that. Thank you.
So I'm currently reading Song of Achilles by Malin Milner. And then I guess in terms of my favorite book, I don't know if this is my favorite book, but it's one that I've read a couple of times, and so maybe it qualifies as Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell by Susanna Clark. I'm running for mayor because it's important that you have a mayor with the temperament and the experience and the judgment to work every day to maintain and improve quality of life for everyone in the city. And that's what I would do if I were your mayor. If I'm your mayor, I'm going to work on two big piles of things. The first, all the basic services that cities have the pleasure and obligation to provide. Public safety and streets and snow and sidewalks and everything under the ground. We can't be good enough at these things. We need to go at them day in and day out. But as you know and as you've heard, we're not just a basic place. And so although we need to do these things, we need to work on other things as well. The city has a role and has an important role with respect to affordability and affordable housing. I have been, as I said, on the Parks Commission for years, and the parks are just so crucial to our quality of life. We need to make sure that the parks we have are beautiful and that they're well-maintained. Ann Arbor, as we have discussed too, is an environmental leader. We can and we ought to do our part. And if I'm mayor, I will continue to do so. And finally, expanded transit, both mass transit as well as non-motorized bicycle and pedestrian safety. These things are crucial to quality of life. They're crucial to a vibrant and active downtown that maintains the character that we know and love. Finding that balance, finding all these things together, working on them day in and day out in our incremental government-y way, this is what I do for mayor, and this is why I'm asking you for your support on August 5th. So thanks.
Thank you guys all so much for spending the time to talk with us here at Literati. It means so much for you to share your opinions about where you see downtown. And thank you all for coming out and for being a participant in tonight's debate. Let's give a round of applause to our first speaker. That is it. Feel free to mingle about and
buy something.
And buy something.
Yes. Yes.
Marianne O'Connor from Met at the Neutral Zone. Yes.
Thank you. Oh, that person right there.
Thank you.
Hi, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's so great to
it
finally
really
meet
great
you.
To meet you.
Yes. Thank you.
Well done.
Thank you.
Yes.
It's always good to see you.
Thank you.
And it was so nice.